so unacknowledged wonders of the world. You are about to witness the eighth.
Your attention, everyone.
All this is regrettable, but there's no cause for alarm.
That's right. Back with the Regrettable Podcast. I'm your host, Tyler Massey. Of course, with me, both excellent co-hosts, the legendary Jay Lindley. How are you, sir?
What's up, homie?
And, of course, my brother, Patrick Massey. That's what they used to call him.
Yep.
Most regrettable.
This episode is brought to you by one of my favorite people ever. It's Laura Lindley, attorney at law in downtown DeQueen, licensed in Arkansas and Oklahoma. She can handle many of your legal needs, divorce, custody, land deeds, you name it. And if she can't perform the legal task you need, she will refer you to the best person for the job. Give her a call today at 870-642-4462 or stop by. She's on the north side of the courthouse, on the square in historic downtown DeQueen. Utilize her 20-plus years of experience, and you will never look back. A huge thanks to all the support she gives us for sponsoring Regrettable. It's Laura Lindley, attorney at law.
Give us the consent, and we'll just send you money.
That's funny.
That's awesome. That means you have something, and you hold on to that, and maybe even if you're not interested, maybe your children can benefit from it. No, I'm just kidding.
Now, if this guy had more than like 132 IG followers, I'd be a little more.
Good point. Okay, yeah. My bad. My bad. Never mind.
Right.
Never mind. Yeah. Sorry.
Yeah.
Dude ain't offering nothing. You got $5.
Just shows you the differences between Patrick and I. Like, if somebody reached out to me and said, "Hey, I heard that. I would really like to," you know, I'd be like, "Yeah, please. Gotcha. Please use it."
That's awesome. Well, no, I mean, hey, congratulations for your product, your creation, for someone to want to make that into a sellable, mass marketable type thing. That is, in my opinion, tops. You are top notch.
Yeah, except now that I have this idea there's this nagging thought in my brain that I build things that somebody could easily just replicate and sell at Walmart.
Right.
You know.
Right. But they're not talking about the big ones. Can't be, right? That would be crazy.
No.
Because it'd be like 40 grand. You would make that, right?
Yeah, and you wouldn't even, like, would they expect you to write the instructions?
You probably put it in a computer, right?
I mean, were they going to reverse engineer it like they're the Soviets with the B-29?
That's right.
You know, just capture one and unbuild it.
Yeah.
And then rebuild it.
Absolutely. They'll just put it in a computer program and boom.
Yeah.
And replicate it 1,000,000,000 times.
Yeah. I hate to break down the Lego wall, but there's lots of builds that you do. It's very clever, and you save yourself a lot of time by hiding. You cheat a lot, essentially, these types of builds, they're not ready for somebody to just pick up and manhandle and they're going to stay the same. Or if they're like the last big one you did, the inside of it is like a scaffolding or not scaffolding, like a structure.
Yeah.
You know, it's not for looks. So
it's
how
an
do you
ugly skeleton? You ever seen a human skeleton? It's gross, man.
That's right. So
nasty.
How do you write an instruction for that? Like, are they meant to fill in every piece and make it this solid thing? Or
now if Halo calls you up and says, look,
that's a different story.
we want to make a 2-scale version of that for our figures,
yeah.
You know, or something. I don't know. And they offer this ungodly amount of money. That would probably be pretty kind of cool.
Yeah.
Because even that in your, you know, in that lifestyle in the Lego world or whatever, people that are like you, they want to just build out of their own brain. Instead of building what they, you know, I don't know.
I have to believe that you will sell out for some amount of money.
Oh,
I have to believe.
That's what I'm saying. I was asking earlier, what is the number?
That's what I say. I've been in this situation before. It's I've always held out to a fault. Like, I've held out for that insane, ungodly amount of money, and then it never happens. So,
Now, and I can understand not selling yourself short. But like Bungie, or I don't even know if it's Bungie anymore. Like the Halo guys reach out and say...
Yeah, and that would be prestigious, too. That's why I said them. Not because they would offer you tons of money, but they'd give you a good amount of money and prestige, I would think.
Yeah.
I don't know that. So but you're right. To a fault, one other time where you kind of held out, and we've talked about this on our podcast, I am very – it inspires me that you didn't get on the plane. You know what I mean? For that TV show. So, I will never fault you for making that decision. But I'm curious, like him, there's got to be a number that'll eventually change it, right?
Yeah, just not like a Big Brother or Brick Brother style show where it like shows it, like, because they show the people also having the drama struggles in the house and everything, right?
Oh, yes. Definitely.
Okay. I couldn't imagine
fake drama, like during the whole like interview auditioning process, they were like trying to inject that between me and my potential partner.
Wow.
You know, and they were like, you guys seem like you're too friendly with one another. It's like, well, that's why we're doing this.
You can have allies, right?
I mean,
one of the wife teams, it's like, or the husband wife teams, is like, well, we need some drama. So can you be a cuck this episode? Do you mind if we have somebody come in? Will Arnett, who hosts the show, he comes in and takes your wife away.
And you, ma'am, can you just admit that you like being DP'd by BBCs? Yeah. All right. That would really for a child's toy and a reality show based on that. That would be very fitting.
Yeah, we're really going to need something like that. So
that's funny.
Wow, yeah. I love it.
Yeah, I couldn't imagine what that show. I still haven't really watched the show. I think I've seen a clip it or something like that.
Seen clips, like on Instagram or something.
Yeah,
because I do deep dives, you know.
Right.
He posts something, he's got, you know, and I'll be like, who's liking his stuff? You know what I mean? And then I'm like 13 people, you know, generations down on Lego people, and it's interesting stuff.
Yeah. The Will Arnett, he's just, what a weird choice. Like, who can we get, you know? And like, not to fault him, not that he's bad or anything, but he's like, He was in one thing and then another, and now he's just the Reese's Pieces voice and hosting Lego show.
It's probably for the best I didn't go to the show and like meet him, because I would have just like thrown Job quotes at him whole time. You know?
Yeah, he's just like, I'm an actor, all right? I'm a lot more than that stupid character.
I don't just do tricks, Michael. Yeah. Right? All right, tricks are what whores turn for money.
Or candy.
Yeah.
He's in front of the kids.
Yeah.
That's funny. Well, yeah. So basically, we cut into the middle of that. Somebody's reaching out because they want to build one of Patrick's builds and sell it as a sellable set.
Yeah.
And there's a couple that you do where I think you could do that, but
I've had lesser offers from better people than this person.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love it.
All right. So if he's listening, get the point.
Hate it for you, bro.
You're just a pushy salesman at this point. Yeah. But it is funny, like, the Lego community. Oh. It's an interesting one, you know.
Sickening one.
Yeah, for you to be in, especially. Like, these shows that you go to and whatnot. Not to trash anybody. They're nerd cons, so you can expect the normal type of nerd stuff going on. But
a lot of kilts. I'll just say that. Kilts. A lot of dudes wearing kilts.
A lot of kilts,
that's
huh?
the overarching theme, really, at Lego shows or these Comic-Con type events that I get invited to. It's a lot of dudes in kilts. That's what I take away from it.
They don't do the thing at the end where they all do a handstand or something. Because you're not supposed to wear underwear with a kilt. If you wear underwear with a kilt, you're not a man.
Yeah, William Wallace turns in his grave.
Yeah, that's right. He wants your balls to have freedom.
Yeah, exactly.
Hack.
Got it, though.
I was in there. But one thing that you talk about that always cracks me up just thinking about it is the Lego enthusiasts.
Yes.
They'll wait for Walmart to do like a sale or something, or like a free giveaway or something, stand in line hours and hours just to get a little $15 set or something.
These are people that cringe when you say Legos.
Yes, absolutely. And I say Legos proudly as a point. I say that.
Yeah. Legos, you play. Yeah, oh, yeah, I know. And that's the thing. That's why Patrick's an ass. He'll go and he'll be like, I play Legos.
Right.
And he's so much better than them.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh,
it was
goodness.
Perhaps the person who's been madder at me than anybody in all of the history of my life was at one of these Comic Cons. Had a dude come up and he was dressed. I know because I watched the show. It was Regan from The Walking Dead. He was one of
Negan.
Oh, yeah. What am I thinking?
That's fine.
Ronald Reagan was an evil dude.
It was Ronald Reagan. If Reagan was in the zombie apocalypse,
he would have been Negan.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So I have this dude come up. He's got
I've got Lucille.
He's got like a baseball bat wrapped in barbed wire something. And he's like pretending to hit this like castle thing that I took like a year to build or whatever. And I look at him. I'm like, dude, I don't know. This ain't right, man. Mad Max was a good dude. All right. Let me just say that. He was a good dude.
Oh, no.
And that guy, like, I just pissed all over his cornflakes in that second. And he just stormed away.
Yeah.
He mumbled something.
Not very Negan
about how he's a f- and then, and then walked
he's
away.
We'll beep that
That's
one.
That's awesome. Okay.
But because I beeped
well,
the last
one. Well, that was a soft.
It was.
Yeah, that's true.
But
I'm not.
I beeped the last one, even though I said. So,
okay. Yeah.
You know, I gotta uphold some sort of standard.
But now the here beep, we are, two now, minutes into it, and Tyler's ready having a
write. I was
gonna
say now the beep says that you although the beep now lends that you said way worse.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Exactly.
You might as well say the whole thing.
Yeah.
And then I'm sorry. Let me just. He says that he RT. Sucks dicks, and then he walked away. All right. But that is that.
I'll
more
allow
politically
that.
Correct.
I'll allow
okay.
That.
All right. Yeah.
So sometimes when I have my prep sheet and I write down the times, I hope nobody finds it because it'll be like at 9 minutes in at nine, and so it's just numbers and the curse word that I'm looking to. So like if somebody were to like, what the hell is this?
Okay, now I gotta be honest, and I don't know where you're at in this, but we really don't listen back to them because it's hard for me to talk badly and stuff. So do you leave like the whole, do you bleep out the whole thing? So there's,
I usually leave a
Okay, that's what I was curious about. Okay,
so you can know what it is, but it's not actually.
I got you.
Yeah, and I don't know. I just like the idea because Patrick's, you know, a tall, handsome, charismatic guy.
Right.
Not super. Yeah.
Keep going.
Yeah. Dark. Yeah. You
know? Like swarthy.
Chocolate.
Right?
He's got chocolate nuts.
Yeah.
And he walks in and just, again, cucks the whole community, and he does it if his building was trash.
I was going to say, and then, he does it and kicks ass in the comps. So
then people come up, it's like, wow, is this Game of Thrones? And he's like, yeah, Hogwarts is right here. Here's Chewbacca. Here's you know, and he just pisses on him.
So true.
I'm like really a nice guy.
Yes,
at
of
these
course.
Things.
But and here's why I love the man. And I don't hang out with very many people outside of my family, but he will tell me if I'm this, he would tell me if I was acting that way. You know what I mean?
Right,
he'd just
be
like, you know, cause there'll be a time he'll be like, Nirvana, huh? Mm.
Yeah. It's just a subtle judging.
But I mean, so I respect it completely. Yeah, you know what I mean?
That is such a Patrick noise. Like I'll sometimes I'll bring up if we were just sitting around and I told you about the Jack Black TikTok we were talking about earlier, I would have described it and you would have been like,
Yeah. That means
that's
I stopped
that
listening
noise, like,
5 minutes ago. No, I'm just kidding. Yeah.
A lot of practice with that one.
Yeah.
I love it. I heard it only once while we were camping, by the way. Do you ever remember that conversation around the camp? We were standing around the campfire for a
There
long
was
time.
A lot of bourbon that was drunk really quickly.
Yeah. We went through the whole bottle, bro.
Yeah.
What?
Yes.
Was it a normal bottle, like the big one?
Hochatown
Distilling Company, by the way.
Right
shout
there.
Out.
Yeah, it was the single barrel.
Nice.
Yeah.
Fueling our podcasts and camping trips.
Do you remember better? I'm not remembering.
Is there such thing as a double barrel? Because I thought I remember reading that.
Maybe it was
like a shotgun blast to the liver.
So it was awesome though.
Yeah, definitely.
Oh my
definitely.
And we filled up, so we didn't want to carry the glass. I don't know. Were we talking about something we need to get right back to?
No.
Okay. I didn't want to change the subject all of a sudden.
No, I think we're played out on the nerds and Patrick not being one.
But we didn't want to carry the bottle because it's a heavy bottle. So, and it's a big bottle. So we put it in your canteen and then a couple of little flasks.
Right.
And
It fit the whole thing.
Yep.
It was a little disappointing. Come on, Hochatown. You can put more liquor in a bottle.
It was the
fill
big
bottle.
Yeah, no. I mean, no.
I'm kidding.
Somehow.
That's a great flask is what I'm saying. Or, I mean, the canteen.
Yes, yeah. And, dude, spicy. That bourbon was spicy.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
My lips were all chapped from being on top of this windswept mountain.
Yep.
Like, they were just cracking. Every time I'd take a shot, I mean, it was just painful, but it was a good painful.
Yeah. Absolutely. And ultimately just numbed it all up.
Yep.
And you're good
to
go.
Absolutely.
I've been trying a little more spice. Like, anytime I get a pizza now, I put the Tabasco sauce all over it, and I love it. And then I picked up some pepper jack cheese, which yeah. this stuff was like, Dave. Yeah, me too. But this stuff was it was pretty spicy, I'm not going to lie. And I went through, by the way, I need a cheese grater. That's like one of those things that I, you know, when
you don't
I was
need
getting
it
into
need
the,
it.
Exactly.
You just buy the shredded cheddar melt.
No.
Or the matzo melt.
I got the brick, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Or the Mexi melt.
Or whatever. Yeah.
Ooh, that's a good one.
For south of the border.
Does not melt. Is not cheese. Yeah. And so yesterday I made two eggs into the pan, cook them up. Milk, and then I shredded, and I had to use the knife like an animal to like Ooh. Make shredded pepper jack cheese, and it Oof. Made it so
like a fluffy.
Yeah, oh, and it made it such cheesy eggs, and it was spicy.
Nice.
And I put that in a flatbread wrap, Ooh. And it was like, dude, it was like one of the greatest things I ever ate.
Nice. Wow.
Yeah. And so the spicy pepper jack cheese probably go good with the spicy bourbon.
Yeah.
But yeah, these guys just went on a camping trip.
Especially for breakfast in the camp.
Oh, yeah. It would be so good.
Yes.
Block a pepper jack cheese into the eggs on a camping trip.
Yeah.
That's in my mind now.
And
I'm
bourbon.
Never not going to make eggs like that.
Really?
Because I put, from now on, I'm putting
that. Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Because I put cheddar in my eggs, and I'm not a big fan. Like, it's all right. It's fine, but it's not like.
It's edible, but it's not something you want to do every time.
Something about the cheddar. I just don't like with the egg taste for some reason.
Right.
And that's the only cheese I've ever really considered putting in eggs. So I did this with the pepper jack, and it took it to a whole new level. I don't know why I started talking about that.
You're good.
Spicy
I'm with
bourbon.
You. Cheddar better with egg whites, maybe.
Yeah.
It's the yolk and the cheddar that don't really blend for some reason.
Could be.
Because you're right, and I would prefer like a whiter cheese or you know like anything like that on a – egg.
I wasn't even planning on it. When I reached in for the milk, I saw the cheese and I was like, oh, screw it. And then that's when I was like,
Laura,
how do you do this
that.
Without a cheese grater?
Nice.
So I was just like thin, like micro slicing or like a laser slicing the cheese.
Oh, yes.
Do you ever put cheese in your eggs?
I love cheese, mushrooms, peppers, onions, everything in my eggs. But I'm with a wife who's from the Stone Age, so she refuses to have any of that.
Just, I'm with her on that.
Yeah, lucky to have salt in them.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Oh, well, no,
I
wait
need
a minute.
A little salt.
Salt and pepper minimum for me in the eggs.
It ruined Christmas morning, to be honest, every time. My favorite thing is the eggs, and Pat would always make, or my stepdad would always make, it's just green bits in it and stuff.
Just everything.
Everything. And it's like eggs prefer them unadulterated.
Gotcha. Jalapeno. I do love some jalapenos, but you're right. You don't put them in. You slice them up on the side and eat them with.
It's kind of like a pizza for me. Like, if I want pepperoni, I'll get that. But honestly, my favorite piece is just a cheese pizza, extra sauce, overcooked. Oh, man. Yeah.
See, sauce.
I need the sauce.
Yeah, see, I'm not as much on the sauce, I guess. Extra cheese is good for me, for sure. Extra cooked. Definitely good for me, but
and you know how like you know how you eat pizza when it's too hot, but you're just diving in anyway and just burning your mouth. Nothing's worse than the extra saucy when you can't wait and you screw it and you take the bite and it's just this magma overflow that just burns everything. And anyway, we're not here to talk about eggs or pizza.
All right.
Yeah, we got higher topics to discuss
that's
today.
That's right. Like the OJ trial. I don't know if you guys.
It's just happening. It's happening now.
That was before you were born.
Yes, it was. Yeah. I think I was a year old.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
I was going to say they teach that in American history now.
They should. And the only reason why I've had this on the prep sheet a couple of days is because you were like damn in school when it was happening. Like you were watching it, and everybody was right.
Pretty sure. I don't know exactly the time, but I'm pretty sure the news came on or like a. This just in, and then they shot to the helicopter following the white Bronco, and they're like, it is believed that O.J. Simpson is in this Bronco, you know what I mean, or whatever.
Right.
And
then
however,
the middle of trigonometry class,
I was trying to think, I think it was actually while I was at home, so I think it may have been in the 5 o'clock news maybe, or even 6 o'clock news, I don't know for sure.
I've never been able to look at a white Bronco the same. Every time I see one, I'm just like, O.J.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Dead broad back there?
Me too.
It's just so iconic.
Not that part.
Yeah.
Sorry.
It's just an iconic and crazy part of like history and entertainment and all that kind of thing. I don't think it was you. I feel like I was just talking to somebody, or maybe I was listening to something about the OJ trial, and it was such big news. They said they had a friend who, when the verdict was rendered, he climbed into a tree because he thought it was going to be one of those things like, where were you? Everybody remembers, where were you when the O.J. verdict was
9/11
rendered?
Yeah,
he wanted to be in a tree. They figured that'd be a question that was asked for years after.
He
where were you?
For this.
Exactly. Where were you during the O.J. verdict? He was like, I was in a tree. What a goof.
It was a tree.
Yeah.
It was at a tree.
Yeah.
Memorable.
Yeah. But the reason it caught my mind is because I watched it. It's a fantastic Netflix show. I finished it last week.
Yes.
The People versus O.J. Simpson. Scrimshin. On Netflix.
Didn't know he was Jewish.
Scrimstein. Go, Jay. But yeah, I watched the show. It's such a good show. And it just made me... I didn't realize how much of an impact and how much of a crazy whole thing that was. Because I was one when it happened.
Sure.
And... like everybody knows. Everybody knows. It's such a critical part of kind of like
pop culture,
history, and law and
yeah, that's
everything.
True too.
Yeah.
Law.
It's hard to take it out the O.J. Simpson trial. It's hard to take it. I feel like out of the time that it occurred. Mm-hmm. I mean, it hit like a particular vein in American society in the 90s. You had the Rodney King riots. Not much before then.
No.
And it was America. It was at this point the Soviet Union had fell. America was in this golden period, and then we realized, you know, we have been spending decades and decades looking outside of the United States to make us feel better, and
right.
Now we didn't have that that source of outside threat mm-hmm. anymore. All we had was to look within ourselves.
Yeah, yeah.
And at here's this point, you take O.J., star football player. He was in
Ace
movies. Ventura.
Yeah.
So
he was the Hertz campaign guy.
Oh, really?
You know? He was like America's man. At the time, you know, and it's like it was a trial. I feel like looking back, of course, I mean, hindsight's 20/20, but it was less about O.J. as it was about America.
Absolutely, that's the way the defense. Spun it. They didn't refute anything.
Sure.
Except for some of the DNA evidence, but nobody understood DNA at that time.
Right.
It was like, kind of this concept of an idea of like, you know what, sure, maybe he's guilty, but this mm-hmm. is, but we need to prove a point in America that we're better than what we've appeared to be
for
these last few years. And so we should let this guy walk free.
Yeah.
You know?
And the hugest boon, like probably the biggest boon in any case ever, you know? Actually, the recent Rittenhouse prosecution was like, that was unbelievable.
Yes.
That was
to talk about there.
Yeah, yeah. And I have it on here.
That's all, yeah.
So we can get into that at some point. But they had Mark Furman, who they thought was a decorated dude, who could, you know, easily just nail this whole thing. And they did. He did. Mm-hmm. He was like 100% on the stand. He was amazing. But he was dealing with these three lawyers who were, you know, just complete aces. Or four lawyers, right. I guess,
you got
right?
Kardashian, Dershowitz, and...
F. Lee Bailey and Robert Shapiro.
Yeah, there
so
we go.
So four. Yeah. And Johnny Cochran. That's the number
Cochran one. Was
yeah,
the
yeah,
one. Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
Five.
Yeah.
Five of them.
Five big lawyers who knew. And F. Lee Bailey, he literally, I watched an interview because after the show came out, the show was a smash hit, and they looked at all the people who are still living and asked them what. And he was like, the dude who came up with the idea, they're cross-examining Mark Furman. Mark Furman is still golden at this time. Although people still probably believe he's a racist, horrible person, F. Lee is just like, I'm going to use the N-word against him. I'm going to take the word and impale him on it. And he just walks up to the stand. He asks a few questions, and they're like, you know, objection leading, whatever, blah, blah, blah. And he's like, all right, have you ever used, and he doesn't say the N-word. He says the word. And he's like, in describing people, have you ever used the word blank? You know, and in a courtroom, and it was like, bang, it just it hit
everybody
and shocked.
Quiet, yeah.
Yeah, everybody got quiet.
Ooh.
And he's like, so, you know, if people were to come in and say that you've used that word, you would say they are liars. All of them, you know, and all this. And it was just this brilliant cross-examination. And then like a month later, the tapes came out because everybody watched that of Mark Furman saying it like 2,000 times or something like and describing planting evidence and malpractice, I guess, and all this kind of like crazy racist beating up, you know, just crazy.
Dang.
So the fact that he was on the stand and he pretty much ruined the whole case.
Mm.
You know, like it was that one guy with the he perjured himself. And then, you know, this nobody could look at him.
Star witness of
yes,
the prosecution.
The star witness, yeah. It was just completely discredited and all that. And then the DNA evidence was easy enough for them to make people just question about it.
Yeah.
You know, like it was mishandled.
Yeah. Yeah, these are very early days of yes. DNA evidence yeah. as well. And
yeah.
You had a superstar, like y'all mentioned, and mm-hmm. all the things he did, plus the camera in the court. That yeah, just blew it out of proportion.
Yeah.
One of the very first like superstar football players that had a public
yeah.
court murder charge.
All the networks bumped everything
yeah.
to put on yeah. the OJ trial and like
because it was because they had access.
Yeah, yeah that's and crazy. The thing about the trial is you can watch the video even though Johnny Cochran's very. You know, his way of talking and all that is very, it can be not entertained, but like it's capturing. It's
right.
Captivating.
Yeah.
It's still a trial, so it's pretty boring.
Yep.
And it's hours and hours, and everybody was watching it.
Yep.
You know, it's just crazy.
Most watched thing in American history, right? Before Tiger King?
Gotta be. yeah. Yeah. Gotta be.
But it was similar. No. Was
yeah. Yeah. Kind of.
No, that's funny.
yeah. But I don't know why. I just wanted to bring it up. Like, do you remember anything specific? Anybody
yeah.
getting angry? Do you remember what it was like after the verdict was rendered? Because I saw actual shots of different types of people, some black, some white. They were celebrating in the streets while white people are just like, you That's know, funny. They are super pissed.
I can remember most of the white people that I knew was like, oh, yeah, he's guilty. No mm-hmm. problem. You mm-hmm. know what I'm saying? I also, most of the black people that I lived around were like, no, I don't think he did it.
Right.
You know, there's a lot of evidence. You know what I mean?
Right.
Which, I mean, that just means I don't know. I don't know what that means exactly.
Right.
But my parents and, you know, shout out to my mom. She was one of those that she grew up in Tulsa. She grew up around racist people, if you will. But, you know, her parents were like, look, we're believers and we just don't want you acting like that. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So be better, I guess, or whatever.
Right.
So she taught me that way. And I grew up around folks that, you know, I couldn't be a racist really because it just too many people that I love are
right.
Of multi-colors.
It's hard to think like or to say yes, I believe he was guilty without also having that like racist angle to it. You know, like
right.
you should be able to say, like, I think all of us probably looking back would say that OJ was definitely guilty, right?
He was found guilty in a civil,
yes.
a civil
yeah.
trial
yeah, he,
following
so,
his.
Once they couldn't
totally.
Grill Mark Furman and bring up the LAPD and have Johnny Cochran, to, you
yeah.
know.
But
you
he
know,
was guilty. You're right. He was guilty and found liable financially for
like
the death.
Million yes. or something.
Right,
like
yeah,
that.
Yeah.
yeah.
Mm-hmm. Millions deaths. Of dollars.
So. Yeah. Like all the evidence and all that. That's such a. That's I don't know. Like how I would. Like I'm almost glad the not guilty verdict was rendered. I'm sad that somebody or two people had to die because of it. It's almost like a sacrifice. But the country was about ready to go on fire again.
And that's what it was almost a sacrifice for American principles, though. In some regard, is when the founding fathers created our judicial system, it was based on the idea that you'd rather have 9 guilty people walk free
mm-hmm.
to ensure that one innocent person is not wrongfully convicted.
Right.
And the O.J. Simpson trial was the epitome of that in modern times.
Yeah.
You know, and you have similar the political sideshow that it was associated with that. It's interesting that you might could argue that it was the first, at least in the modern times that anyone listening is going mm-hmm. to remember. You could look at the Monkey Scopes trial, but from way back in the day or something. You know, Brown versus the Board of Education, things like that. But at least in the ones that in recent memory, it was we have seen these things happen very much since then. You could say that the guy who killed thank you for writing that pause down.
Oh no,
I was just going to say the idea that somebody could argue that it wasn't premeditated murder if murder one was the only option as well. I mean, they're a good lawyer may be able to put that across type
yeah.
thing. So
The show was very dramatized, but they showed at one point, apparently Robert Shapiro's like a famous like plea guy. Like he just works out great deals for you to plead guilty. And he comes in like saying, all right, here's what I think we could get it down to manslaughter.
Right.
Like by saying that you came in, you were mad and you wanted to, you know, slice her tires.
Gotcha.
You know, and poke her tires out. And you saw her there with dude and you just. Went
crime
crazy
of passion.
And lost it.
Yeah, exactly. Which does have a lesser sentence than
Absolutely.
Premeditated
yes,
murder.
Yes.
Yeah.
But man, that would be tough, you know. And this is while they're formulating their defense, and the rest of the crew is like, "So anyway, we're here to win this," you know. And the craziest part to me about the whole trial is actually the jury. I've looked into it a little bit. Nothing crazy, you know, but just to see, because I didn't realize what it takes to be a juror and like, or, you know, and like, and
we
and
could not be, by the way,
is that
as as media professionals, we would not be
interesting.
They would dismiss us.
Yeah. I was just wondering is it because like, what do we call it? Like
tainted,
either tainted or,
biased,
a nomad. Is what I'm trying to think. Like, why haven't I been selected for jury duty? Like, have they just been sending all the letters out to my previous, you know, I don't know. I don't know why. But obviously, it's not going to be the case for a normal case. But in this one, they were told like 3 months. It's probably, it's good. And that was long, right?
Yeah,
that was long.
Sure.
It turned out to be what, 9 months of jurors who cannot see or talk to their family.
Right.
They have to stay in these hotel rooms. They can't read or watch any TV or any radio or hear anything. Anything coming through had to be like poured through
redacted
made sure.
Yeah.
Getting paid like $25 a day.
Exactly.
And just kept up. And some of these started going crazy. Some of these jurors were like, this is absolutely insane. Like 9 months. Imagine
that's
just 9 months. Just when it was supposed to be 3, which is still a long ass time.
Yeah.
You know, and of course, you can't know their names. Like the defense and the prosecution cannot know their names. So they have to
juror
give
one,
them.
Two, three, four, five,
yeah,
four,
yeah,
five,
yeah. Like juror 4, 5, 6, 7. You know, like that was their name,
that's
you know,
great.
And this and that. So I was reading and in the show, they, of course, highly dramatized the what the jurors went through. And I was like, I didn't understand it at first until I looked. I was like, oh, I have no working knowledge of our judicial system at all.
You bring up an issue there that has gotten so complicated over the years just because of how connected the world has gotten through social media, the internet. I mean, the O.J. Simpson trial happened like, I mean, we're talking like the early mm-hmm. days of the internet.
Mm-hmm.
And, look how much more complicated it's gotten now. Where the Ghislaine Maxwell trial recently found guilty. I don't believe she's been sentenced yet, but one of the jurors came out and on TV talked about how he was, you know, he had mentioned that during the deliberations, the jury deliberations, that he was sexually abused as a child, and how that led him into swaying other jurors who might have been hung on the decision into finding her guilty. And now that the you know,
is that like a mistrial now, or like
that's what her like lawyers are going for at the very at the very minimum a mistrial, you know, because this dude went and blabbed his mouth afterwards, you know.
So, both the prosecution and the defense for the OJ trial were having their private investigators find out stuff about the jurors to have them kicked off.
Yep.
And they did it so many times, but they were just going back and forth having like, you know, Johnny Cochran was having white jurors kicked off and the defense was having black jurors kicked off. And it got to the point where it could have been a mistrial if they didn't stop and this and that.
That's
and
funny.
They were talking about a mistrial, like, you know, now they don't put Mark Furman up. Now we don't have a racist LAPD angle. We don't make him try on the gloves and all that, you know. That's another big thing, you know. F. Lee Bailey, the same guy who cross-examined Mark Furman, said he literally went and insulted one of the prosecution people, saying basically he's like, you have no balls. If you don't tell him to try on the gloves, I'm going to. So he tricked the prosecution into telling OJ to try on the gloves, and of course he had to wear those things, and he was like making it seem like he couldn't get them on. And so now you have a picture on every newspaper cover in America, every TV in America, every everything of OJ wearing gloves that do not fit him.
Yep.
Oh man, you know, like what? Just so many missteps in that dirty defense, man. Like where it was, you know, we're not even going to refute the facts. We're just going to, you know, that's crazy. It's crazy that you could lose such a open and shut case like that, you know, with money.
Yeah,
I mean, you just bought all the best people.
And the allusion I was trying to make earlier was the was when Derek Chauvin was found guilty of murdering George Floyd. I mean, the defense, it was kind of an opposite of that situation where we found this person guilty to prove that our system's maybe not, but to suggest that our system's not as racist as maybe it actually is.
Right, right.
You know, where you look down at the most small, basic, you know, like a glove not fitting, you know, you don't take into account the bigger picture at times, or you're doing it maybe for the bigger picture.
Right.
You don't, you're not taking that into account, but you're doing it for the bigger picture.
Classic case of like entertainment, because you can murder somebody in small gloves. Like it doesn't really have that big of a, you know, and he had the gloves on underneath it. Yep. He had the latex gloves on underneath, so he wouldn't, because it's evidence, I guess, and
couldn't put more fingerprints on it.
Yeah,
and, just to make sure, I do not suggest that Derek Chauvin was not guilty, of murdering George Floyd. It's just that maybe that there was a broader picture of a of a systemic failure in police training and in handling minority populations within Minneapolis. Blah 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 blah.
I think it's safe to say that the outcry is what got him in charged.
It's crazy that these outside influences can absolutely affect the judicial system, even if you keep these jurors away and this and that. Like, I guess the judge, Lance Ito, from the OJ trial, man, he was just like, I mean, like every day on SNL and this and that. It got dudes playing him and making fun of him, and huge political outcry about, you know, this and that and civil rights and saying Lance Ito is, you know, and all that. And this dude's like a judge. He's got to be, God, that's got to be
hard.
And
that was back when you could make comments where even like in comedy where you could make, you know, origin comments like the Asian or you know whatever
you could
comment
whatever you want the and 90s right
yeah
like,
yeah
there was no
so
offending.
It was exactly it wasn't like you couldn't get away with talking about his country of origin or whatever you
absolutely.
Know what I mean.
Like Bob Saget being scared when an Asian woman hops into the cockpit of the plane he's about to fly in. Yeah. We'll get. I'm sure we'll get to that here in a minute. But
100%.
But you know, you alluded to this earlier, and I think in a similar vein to the O.J. Simpson trial is the Rittenhouse trial, where one of the points that was proven that we seem to forget consistently is how prosecutors and just a whole a state or federal prosecution team will take tremendous leaps of faith with no evidence backing them to and just shoddy, sloppily put together cases against people to try to convict them of things because that is their job. You know, OJ, you could say as much as you can say the defense team was incredibly competent in how they defended or how, you know, even sleazy underhanded, however they defended O.J. Simpson, they would have not been able to do that without an equally or more incompetent prosecution.
100%.
And we saw that, we got to see that in modern times with the Rittenhouse trial. And hey, I'm just going to throw it out there and say that from I watched most of the Rittenhouse trial and I had paradigm shifted. I needed to remember that prosecutions are not like they do not carry 100% faith. They should not. And he was not guilty, and he was rightly found not guilty. And what you saw is just as great as his defense was. The prosecution was the biggest benefit, the biggest aid to him being found not guilty.
So emotional,
so sloppy.
But sloppy, and just like it was weird to see people like that, lawyers, like prosecution lawyers, acting like children.
Yeah,
I mean, you know, like
ignorant, absolutely ignorant, and hoping that sleight of hand would help their case, that people just wouldn't pay attention. Is that there were facts that they knew that they did not, they did everything not to present, which is what a prosecution team is there to, is to present facts.
Right.
These people were doing everything they could to hide facts, to help their prosecution against Rittenhouse.
You've talked about, did you have something?
I was just going to say I didn't pay enough attention to it, and that's why I like listening to someone that actually watched the trial, you know, versus read Facebook because I've seen one clip. But was he there for a good reason? I mean, was he there for a, did you feel like he was there because he was trying to protect somebody's property or someone he loved? I didn't know why he was where he was at, because it sounded like he left where he lived to go be a part of that.
And that is exactly how the prosecution and the media portrayed it, when in fact his dad lived in Kenosha and had connections with, from what I understand now, a lot of things have happened since the Rittenhouse trial, so excuse me on some of these facts, but I guess he had some family connection, friend connection. Again, his dad lived in Kenosha, so there was a personal relative there. He was from outside of Wisconsin where this occurred, but there was a connection to a dealership where Rittenhouse was going to protect. You had a situation where certain groups formed to protect businesses that were, I mean, if you saw what was happening in Kenosha, places were burning down left and right there. Right. And he went with another group of people to protect this particular car lot, to keep it from the vehicles from being vandalized and burned and everything. Right. And that, you know, his presence there, which one, because he was not just a tourist shooter, you know. Again, he had personal connections to the place that were totally left out of the media and prosecution's narrative.
But he did. It's not like he stuck to that, though.
No.
I mean, because the situation, I never thought in a billion years that he would be convicted on anything. When it started going to trials, like, he's definitely going to, that's going to be a not guilty thing because he was attacked.
Yes.
That's what it
the
comes down to.
The video evidence is.
What it comes down to is he's on trial for shooting somebody.
Yep.
So not why he was there, not this,
not
and that, none of that,
aspects.
None of that,
yeah,
none of that. But you had a kid with an AR-15 and running around a protest with his beliefs. I mean, I believe in my heart he was there to antagonize. He was there, like, I mean,
find somebody to shoot.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah.
He was there in a medical capacity.
Yes, ridiculous.
Yeah, a medic with an AR-15 slung over his shoulder. Yeah. I don't know. That's but at the end of the day,
they usually portray medics as non-combative in most of your TV show.
Right. Right. Yeah. I mean, did he make a poor decision? Extremely so.
Yeah.
Of a stupid decision. Mm-hmm. And he more or less came out and said that it was an extremely stupid decision that he made. But what by shooting three people, two of them fatally, did he do the wrong thing? According by the book of law, he did not. Now, where I find the whole thing has just spun into such a shit show is what he's been doing since his non-guilty verdict.
Yeah.
You know, appearing on every... I mean, when is he going to be on Alex Jones next?
Yeah, he's next online.
Yeah. He's every podcast and show. Yes. Yeah. I mean, and on there just... if not bragging about what he did, showing a lot less remorse than I saw during the trial. I mean, at one point, when they asked him to describe what the incident led up to the shooting of the first individual in Kenosha, I mean, the guy broke down in tears, and it touched my heart because I'm like, I hear a lot of people talking about, you know, if somebody breaks in my house, man, I'm gonna shoot them down. 99 times out of 100, those people ain't got the guts to do it. And if they think they do, then they're not contemplating the after effects of. I mean, I have friends who kill people in Iraq and Afghanistan, and it haunts them every night. And these are people who were trained to kill bat folks out there.
Right.
You know, not just some guy who works, you know, part-time at an Easy Mart who's got himself a little pistol and he's ready to shoot somebody down for stealing his TV. Believe me, it's going to haunt you.
He even said he did not believe that the guy with the pistol would have shot him.
Yeah.
And stuff like that. So, I mean, that's where I had a paradigm shift?
A paradigm shift, yeah.
I agree. And again, when this whole thing started, I was like, I mean, it's so cut and dry.
Mm-hmm.
The actual illegal part, the part that's, you know, legally questioned is legal. Like that, he didn't do anything wrong. It was just what led to it. And since then, his hero status among QAnon and everything else, I'm sure, is almost telling a different story, and it almost confirms that legally, yeah, he did nothing wrong. He just put himself into a situation where he could do that, and that it's just not right. It's not right to run around. It doesn't matter if you're trying to help people and all this, like that. It's provocative. Like, what could you, like, you're poking a dog with a stick, and then when it bites you and you shoot it, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, what the hell do you expect?
I think with my beliefs, I would have to just let the insurance pay me for the damage done if they burned it down.
Thou shalt not kill.
Yeah. Ultimately, that exact phrase is something we could talk about a whole nother situation. Yeah. But in this situation, I don't believe I could go and look to take someone's life.
Yeah.
Even if it wasn't, that's not what he was looking to do. I couldn't think, okay, these people are definitely going and burning buildings down. I'm going to go stand in front of one of them, and if they run at me, I will shoot them dead. And that's not, I don't feel like I could be that
way.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, you're talking about either protecting, like, would you rather just let the place burn down or put your own son or somebody you know into the defense to either kill or be killed?
Right. No, I wouldn't. It. I would never ask my son or my friend's son or whatever, but also at the same time, if it was my home, and it was, I would probably not pull the trigger if it was just me.
Right.
I would probably try to talk to them and find out, you know, see if I could. No, they're going to jail.
Yeah.
Obviously.
That's.
But and if they pull a gun, I don't know if I could pull the trigger first or not. I may die. I don't know.
Yeah.
But if it was my family, I believe 100% that I would shoot whoever was coming to hurt them.
Yeah,
and I believe that
a group of people outside your house or something, and you're telling me you're going to defend at all costs, totally. But to just run around random streets, like a maniac. I mean, he looked like a maniac in the videos. You know, not even just the, because there's plenty of videos.
Yeah,
and then that shows you one other thing, like. And he can do something that a lot of people can't, which is walk up to a police car with a rifle and not have any, like,
and they tell him
just turn around and go back the other way.
Head back the other way, white guy. Like, honestly, I mean, that's.
Well, and that's, I will certainly take your all's points, and not to be devil's advocate here, but those opinions do run contrary to the predominating vein of American thought and history. You take this shit into your own hands, because what we saw in Kenosha was, and I'm not going to fault the police department there or law enforcement in Kenosha. This was a situation that they were never trained for, and entirely wholly unprepared for, but what you saw was a breakdown of law enforcement in Kenosha. And in those situations, we've seen it time and time again. And in America, there were plenty of times. At Wisconsin, 200 years ago, there was no law enforcement there. I mean, you took these things into your own hands, and that is where the you know, only so much you can see all your neighboring businesses get burned down left and right, you know, until at some point you're like, man, obviously nobody's going to help us here. Sure, we can deal with insurance, but what's nicer with it than dealing with insurance after the fact is preventing that incident from happening in the first place, and having. I mean, when in effect, I don't mean to color this word at all, but vigilantes, you know, for good or bad,
right?
You know, protect your businesses.
But a lot of people, I'm sorry. I was going to say a lot of people, I imagine, would, if it was the reverse, because they're going to stand up for Kyle Rittenhouse defending himself, but they'll also outcry when the vigilante gets decked in the head with a skateboard and he gets knocked out and then maybe stomped to death or something. Right. Now a gun rights protect yourself activist kid who can be a hero in a totally different way, as in he's now, you know, with American Eagles behind him. Yeah, a martyr.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, it, again, protect your house and your family. I 100% understand that, but
it's weird. It's been such a roller coaster. Like, I joke a lot. I don't know if I have any convictions in my life that I'm 100% on. I can't tell you what my favorite animal is. I don't even know what my favorite color is. And the Rittenhouse, this whole thing with him has just reinforced that. I mean, it's been a roller coaster of opinion and thought for me. When I was one who got caught up in the media narrative and the prosecution's case before the trial, that, man, this dude's guilty. Yeah. Might as well shoot him. We don't even need a jury trial.
Right.
You know, this is just some tourist from Illinois, I think he's from, or Indiana or something, and he comes to Wisconsin just to shoot people. Then you start to see the nuance of the case, and I'm like, man, I'm not entirely sure if what he did was wrong. From a meta perspective, but certainly from a legal perspective, it's not.
Yeah.
But then I
agree with what he was tried for. He was not. Yes. Yeah, for the
from the cut and dry aspect of a criminal justice system, he did not do anything that is outside the bounds of law.
Correct.
But what he has, the way he has portrayed the whole thing since his guilty verdict has also, it's made me incredibly disgusted.
Yeah.
Now, I'll say he's done better than George Zimmerman, who, when he shot Trayvon Martin, put his Glock up for on eBay to the highest bidder. Mm-hmm. You know, who wants this gun that shot some young black kid? You know, give me money for it. Whereas Rittenhouse declared, I don't know if he actually did. Obviously, I haven't followed up with it. He had that AR. He said he was going to have that AR-15 destroyed.
Yeah, it's funny you bring that up, because the reason I put this on the prep sheet is, one, I was thinking of the OJ thing, but I saw an article the other day and I misread the headline. I went in to actually read the article. I was like, oh, I. And again, I didn't make any judgments. I wanted to read the article.
Funny.
I was like, what in the world is this? And I thought the article read basically that a man was arrested for buying Rittenhouse's gun. And I thought it was after the fact. I thought he had like put, here's the gun I killed people with. And then some patriot, you know, paid a ridiculous amount of money for it. That's just what ate in my head immediately.
Sounds like that.
Right. But then I look at it and they're talking about, and I don't know if he was arrested or something, but it was actually the guy who bought the gun for Rittenhouse.
That killed the
that gun.
Yes,
because
he was not old enough to own that.
So that guy is like convicted, or maybe he's not guilty or something.
Technically, he did something illegal.
Right. And then my whole thoughts on the whole thing is, I don't think, like, the nuance matters, but then sometimes it doesn't. Like, if we're talking legally, I don't think it matters if he has a dad in Kenosha. If he didn't, if he was just in Illinois and he crossed over state lines and went to a protest to defend people or, like, try and help medical or just, you know, provoke people.
Yeah.
None of that is technically illegal.
Right.
Right? So it doesn't, I don't care about the dad. I don't care if he was there on whatever reasons.
Right.
I just know that, like, if you find yourself in a situation where you're running around the streets having to defend yourself, you were in a wrong place. There was a bad decision somewhere in there.
Yeah.
And then I don't get vigilantism myself, so I don't understand why somebody would want to put themselves in that situation and try and be a hero. You're never going to be a hero. As a hero is probably one of the dumbest things you can try and be in a situation when you have no training. You can let the heroes
be the heroes.
I mean, you know, but so, and then legally, when I heard about the trials, there's no way. There's no way they can inject all this political nuance into it and get a guy convicted. Although I guess it's almost the reverse with OJ injecting all kinds of political stuff and getting a guy acquitted.
But they both run and
they do.
They have similar veins.
Yeah,
you know,
it's interesting. So you know, my whole thought on it, again, I try not to have any convictions either. You know.
Yeah.
I don't think he necessarily did anything wrong legally. I'm not, like, super upset that he killed people. I mean,
yeah,
it's more just like, ugh. Yeah. And then since, I think the guy should have been not guilty, and he should have gone away forever.
Yes.
Right. Well, you guys,
shut up.
You guys know that I try to stay away from a lot of that
national
politically driven, seemingly, you know, or whatever. But
that's hard to do now.
It is, yeah. And it is. But the one thing that I saw via the trial was when I was on the treadmill at the gym, and they had it on the TV that was in front of me. The woman that was sitting next to me was watching. So I'm running, you know, and I see the only thing I see of that trial is a video clip that they played probably 100 times while I was sitting there watching of one of the times that he shot someone. And that video, because I saw it 100 times slow-mo and moved and backward mm-hmm. and forward and blah, mm-hmm. blah, blah, blah. He was justified in just what I saw. I don't know how he got, if I'm a judge and I don't take into account how he got there or what had happened after, just that video clip, he was justified in that shooting because he was being attacked.
That was a man defending himself from crazed attackers.
Yeah.
That's what it looked like if that's all you saw.
You strip away everything else. It is legal to carry a long arm, you know, on your shoulder, but totally unconcealed. It's legal. What's illegal is try to kill somebody.
Right.
And that's what that video showed.
Or brandishing it, right? Can you point it at people?
No. That's different, you know, and
he
you
was
know,
see the video. He
had a day.
Until he got pushed down.
Barrel was at the ground the whole time.
That's why I also think like he knew what he was doing. Like he knew exactly what he was doing.
Sure.
If he was a dummy. And again, you take that clip. I mean, it doesn't matter the political affiliations or why they're there. The guy with the gun could have been a Democrat defending himself against crazed QAnons. Like it doesn't matter.
Exactly.
You know, that's why. And then so my mind was already made up before the trial. And then watching that process, I didn't watch the trial. I just watched like the Reddit compilation of the prosecution being, I've never seen anything like it. You've talked a few times about how people can't hide their face nowadays.
Mm.
You know what I mean? Like you maybe used to be a thing. Somebody says something you don't disagree with. You just politely sit there. But now everybody's like, you know, doing crazy faces and basically speaking really loudly with their face.
Right.
I can't. The prosecution just looked like children,
you
know, like and all this. And then they got up there and there was like the part where the prosecution basically knew they were done. And he's just sitting there like looking like he's crying like you're you know, you should just be like, all right, well, lost this one. We'll go on to the next one. Like, I don't know. This is weird.
You know, and maybe it was my own naivete or what, or I dropped my cynical guard there for a second, but I was like, you know, this is going to be, the Rittenhouse trial can be an extremely critical learning lesson for both sides of the political spectrum here. The left, that sometimes things aren't as bad as we try to portray them to be, that and it was weird for the left, they're always talking about how the criminal justice system is inherently broken and can't figure out things right, and then they expect a prosecution to do the right thing in this case. And then you have, I figure for the right, this would maybe be a little bit of a learning lesson in that that not every guy with a gun is inherently good if he's not a criminal or something. My hope was to tone down some of these fiery thoughts that a lot of folks on the right have, is that vigilantism. Yes, or that you know, just it all comes down to the individual to protect everything, because where's I going with that? Because when I watched this trial and when I saw Rittenhouse break down and cry and you know, in the middle of this trial, trying to describe what led up to the events where he shot this. It was nothing that he was obviously, to take it at face value, and I mean, it seemed as genuine as a human reaction as any I've ever seen. This guy was not happy with what he did. And it was a way for the public to be like, man, you know, this was just a bad situation all around. Hopefully I never find myself in that situation that he found himself in. And automatically the reaction to, I'll just say, looking at my own personal Facebook page from people who I'm friends with on Facebook who are more conservative leaning. I mean, they automatically portrayed him as a hero when this guy, during his trial, his own words, he did everything to present himself as anything but a hero. You know, you saw all the pictures of Rittenhouse with American you know, flag behind him and eagles flying and stuff that. And y'all are trying to make
some
this guy
pizza face little kid. Like, yes, it was crying at the trial about killing. Like, I would have have imagined a lot of people would have been like, this is the bitch that's representing us?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
our right. gun rights?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah,
no.
True. But it's a lot of people, obviously, they did the similar thing and just watched a quick compilation on Fox News or whatever of the trial. You know, they didn't catch the whole, the nuance of of the thing, that this was an extremely, extremely stupid thing that this kid did, but he did not break any laws. And God hope that that nobody finds themselves in the same situation that he does, because it's, I would like to think that these killings are going to haunt him the rest of his life. Now, I see his appearances on media ever since, and he seems quite blasé about it. Yeah. But
it's too easy to say, oh, well, I would never be in that situation. So what you say is, your child, how would you feel if it was your child that made a series of bad decisions that got him into this situation, and just so happened they didn't break any laws, so they got off? Or, you know, they got out of the situation.
Right.
If it was your child, you probably would be more along the lines to be like, thank goodness.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
And this no matter how you feel about it personally, exactly. whether you would have like, I would have been there and I would have shot them guys too. And then you start thinking about, well, my kid's a different story. At the very least, I don't want him to go through this whole like media spotlight. I don't want, you know, you shoot somebody that's trying to steal your TV inside your home. If you don't even care about human life, well, care about this, that your gun's going to be taken away from you through the whole investigatory process.
True. Yeah.
You know, you're going to be put in this spotlight. All this attention is going to be put on. It's going to be a bad night. It's going to be a bad many nights for you.
But the problem is, there's too many that seen Ridenhouse, and they're going to be like, but I'm going to be the hero in local.
Yeah.
Local.
Yeah. Everybody took the wrong lesson from this, from this whole thing. It's just, man, it's just American society is, I don't know, man.
That's you're 100% right. Yep. Nobody learned a damn thing.
Yeah.
And I learned that Rittenhouse stinks. Like, he's a terrible guest on things.
Yeah.
Like,
oh, really?
Yeah.
Because that's the thing. They're like, I saw a clip of him on Louder with Crowder. Do you know Steven Crowder?
Oh, yeah.
You know, the worst.
This is the guy, prove me wrong guy, right?
Yes. Yeah. You ever seen the meme?
Yes.
Yes. Prove me wrong. And that thing, he just goes up to campuses and puts down, there's only one gender. Prove me wrong. That's what that's from. That said, that's the original one.
He has a million talking points. He knows exactly what you're going to say.
Yeah, yeah.
And he's just got responses to that.
Exactly. And sits down and then makes people look crazy.
That's funny.
You know? There, I just saw a clip of him on that show, and, you know, he's like this little guy, you know, and this is how he talks.
Pizza
and
face. Like, he's just so weaselly pale.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
He'll make a great Republican in the future.
That's right. And they're like, so what do you like in women? Like, you getting a lot of, and he's like, he's like, I don't like objectifying women, but I really like big boobs and big asses. And it's like, this kid is 12.
Yeah,
like, what
yeah.
in the world? Like, and these people, and then other parts where he's talking and I'm just seeing the host like, why do we have this guy?
Yeah.
Like, oh my God, I wish this is. And they always do that. The right's heroes are always so bad. They had that one dude. They had Joe the plumber.
Yeah.
That guy who was neither a plumber or poor. He was like super, like, he was talking about, I'm just trying to live my day. He's like rich.
White collar.
Yeah. And then they had, what's that dude from Texas or whatever? Like, he stood his ground on some farm. I don't remember what the thing was. What the hell was his name? He was an older guy, and they had him. He was like the Republican friend du jour for 2 months before, like, he was he literally was like at a speaking or something, and he's like, and here's one thing that you need to know about the Negro, you know, and like those words and this and like a bunch of other.
He shot like some black guy that showed up at his house asking for directions or something, right?
Is this
the
guy?
It was
older dude, cowboy hat, and just just a costume, like you you would expect him to be like a robot dancing and like a Howdy Doody Chuck E. Cheese or something.
He got off on Texas's stand your ground law.
Yeah.
It's almost pretty much doesn't matter why anybody's at your house. You can shoot them if you don't want them to be there. Some dude, and he, you know, stopped at his house, asked for directions, and a guy shot him down.
Yeah.
And got off on the stand your ground law.
Yeah.
And,
they had that. Or go ahead.
Yeah. And then, he's the hero de jure.
Mm-hmm.
Until
he messes up.
And the first time I heard that Texas stand your ground law, when it really stood out to me was when this may have been national news where, I don't know, I was a teenager or maybe early 20s even, but the guy come outside and shot, took like a couple shots maybe at the repo man, killed him through the cab of the repo truck after he had drove off his property with his car. Obviously, he was repossessing the car. The guy shot him, and he got off on the stand your ground because he thought somebody was stealing his car.
You know, it's and the rights, that's their knee-jerk reaction, unfortunately. And I'm not the right. I'm just saying, like, I'm saying the media that is on the right side of things, that is trying to control the narrative of people who find themselves more conservative in politics. I'm not going to say, because I feel like the average conservative in this country, if he or she... or it? Is there an it on the conservative
side? Probably.
Was to see straight through that
Milo Yiannopoulos.
Yeah.
Bruce Jenner, maybe.
Right.
I don't know.
they're not going to agree with any of it, but the media's knee-jerk reaction is to present this like Ahmed Aubrey in Florida. You know, they did their best to show him as like some black man who was somewhere where he wasn't supposed to be. And these three white fellas were just doing their, they were just being neighborhood guardians when they killed him. And then fortunately, it found out, no, these were just some evil dudes.
Or maybe not evil dudes,
but they sure chose to do the most evil thing imaginable at a certain moment. And they've all got life in prison now and hopefully get raped by some big-ass white supremacist dude for the rest of their life.
Yeah, I'll take you.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
I don't know. Those white supremacists will probably sell him to the black side in jail. Because they'll probably want him at the top.
Hopefully they just get raped by everybody. Like, that's my hope.
Equal
in jail. They segregate instantly.
That's true.
You definitely.
Yeah. The thing is, and the reason I say the right, and I don't mean to say that every single right person listening is like, oh, yeah, I love Rittenhouse, or like, he's my hero, and this and that. It's because, honestly, on the left side, I don't see too many fetishized heroes. I really don't. In fact, a lot of the people that get brought up, they tear them down later on for not being liberal enough. You know, they like maybe somebody makes a stand and then somebody in there, well, your tweet that was kind of anti-Asian from 7 years ago is actually not good enough. So, you know, so it's like the opposite. So I don't, it's messed up on all sides. I'm not saying, but this whole thing about plucking these heroes out and then it turns out they're not. I only really see it on one side.
The left is generally is quick to move on, I think, and to realize their stupidity of their ways, which is, man, that's something we all need. We're all stupid. We're all stupid. Mm-hmm. It's just, you know, what can get us beyond our day-to-day stupidity is just to see through it a little bit and to try to do a little better next time. And for the left, Jussie Smollett was the perfect example.
That was a good, great point.
Yeah.
He has... been back to the point of being faking it all, right?
He's convicted of faking the whole thing, know? And, you know, you saw all the justice for Jussie things, and as soon as the word comes out, like, he probably faked it, and then he's convicted of faking it. I do think, and here, man, we all carry our biases, and my biases is with the left side of things. I tend to see where the left has took that as a little bit of a learning lesson.
Yeah.
Now, whether they'll carry that through to the next lesson that hits the media, the national stage or whatever, but
they threw Jussie away pretty quick.
Absolutely,
like, they threw Kathy Griffin away pretty quick.
That's true.
Remember
that's
her?
That's true.
Yeah.
When there she had Trump's head on a cut off.
If you remember this, and you're right. Leaning and you remember and you want to believe that a lot of liberal people were chuckling up and nobody was laughing at that. First of all, Kathy Griffin isn't funny in general.
And that wasn't funny. That was
in bad taste,
horrible.
I would say.
Yeah.
And nobody really, you know, whatever magazine that she was in doing that or whatever stupid rag, you know, they...
Nobody remembers now. No.
Yeah, exactly. That was their time to show that they were edgy or whatever. That has nothing to do with it.
And
anything.
If you're listening to this and you're like this, you know, if you're, your face is grimacing and you can't stand what you're hearing right now, just remember that you're a lot more liberal than what you might give yourself credit for. You don't believe that blacks and whites should be segregated anymore. You don't believe... Because you depend on your wife's paycheck to make it through week to week. You don't believe that she should just be stuck at home taking care of the house. You don't believe a lot of things that your conservative ancestors from 60, 70 years ago believe in. And believe me, you're a lot more liberal than what you think, because that is the trend of human history.
And that is liberalism. You're not caught up in all the identity politics and this and that. Well, a little bit on your side, maybe, because now you're identifying. Yeah. Now the right has these identities of like guns and working class and this and that. There is that identity, but you know, I think that's a gun you can physically hold in your hand. Some of the left's identity politics are things that I can't even conjure up or imagine.
Yeah,
my own. So that turns so many people off.
And the left is very stupid nowadays.
Yeah.
It does a lot of stupid and says a lot of stupid, takes a lot of stupid positions. Mm-hmm. But don't take that away from your own, the liberal things that you hold. And believe me, most conservatives nowadays, they would never take gay marriage away.
Right.
From gay people in this country. You know, that's one of those things we've just learned to accept. Mm-hmm. You're accepting a lot of things on a conservative side that you don't think your parents or grandparents maybe would have accepted 20 or 40 years ago, but you take nowadays as just as for granted.
Yeah.
And those things, you're going to add more and more of those things in the future, you know.
Did you have something?
What was we talking about?
I was going to say, Jay, you told me something when I first started working with you. And it's something I knew, but I'm using your, like in my world, famously way of putting it. You said that after your mother passed away, that you realized that there's just crap that you don't need to be caring or stressing about. And I think that's happening like a lot. Like, you know, it happened for you in that personal way and your personal things that you were stressing that you didn't need to, you washed them out. I think maybe a lot of people are coming around and realizing that things.
That's a good point.
You know,
COVID has done that for some people. COVID
has definitely done
and
it shouldn't have to take the death of somebody near you or even
that's
a tragic event.
I've heard you make before is that, and I don't know if it was quite just explicit as this, but it's like not everybody needs to lose their mother before they just need to realize what's important in life.
I agree.
I think about it a lot. The only thing that I still let get to me is work. But apart from that, I have
most closely with.
But I have had your words in my head before, where I'm like, wait, I don't care about this. This yoke is off me. You know, so what's even the point?
A brief synopsis on that: leave work, get the call, mom, you know, passed away in her sleep the night before, and. I realized on the drive to go to Oklahoma City and be with my dad that the things that I was worried about that morning, you know, that I mean, I had some pretty pressing things that were coming up that week that I had to take care of at the office and I was worried about it. Those things melted away. Somebody took care of them.
Right.
Somebody took care of them.
Yeah.
So that just, did that mean I could just be lazy and not do anything anymore? No.
No.
That meant that I didn't have to worry about it.
Right.
Because if I couldn't, it would be done.
Right.
Now, I'm a reliable guy, so I'm going to be here when it's time to be there and do the things and that take care of business and make it happen. If you can't make it one day, you know, the news will be done. Mm-hmm. You know, if you can't make it one day or the next day or you get real sick or something, we'll make the things happen. So, but it's, so you're right. It's like,
it's a great realization.
At the end of the day, we all believe the same thing, and it's very simple things. Do we have enough? Do we have enough food to put on the table tonight to survive till tomorrow?
True.
Yeah.
And are the kids that we have or are going to have in the future, are they going to be safe? They're going to have a good school to go to. I mean, it's about our kids and about putting it all comes to the future. Really, our kids. I mean, you know,
and to expand that the people we love. Not, you know what I mean?
Absolutely.
You're right.
Yeah,
because we look after each other in a sense. You know, outside of this building. You know what I mean?
Right. So now things change on how to make those things happen, how to make things safe, or how to put food on your table. But at the end of the day, we all believe the same things.
Yeah,
you know,
and progression is. You can't stop it. Society is kind of rolling, right? Like a rock. There's no way. It's so obvious when somebody has the beliefs that they want to stop and push it back up the hill. I don't think many small town Americans really have that. Like, honestly, a lot of the conservatives I talk to, again, the gun is something they can hold in their hand. It's something they've held in their hand since they were kids.
Yeah.
So could you imagine, you know, whatever it is that you're listening that you've done since a kid, and then somebody trying to take it away when it's like it's allowed.
It's like taking your country music away.
Sure.
It's anything that gives you nostalgia.
Yeah.
Especially.
Yeah. And
totally.
And they just don't care. They don't care about a lot of the other things. So the whole thing about, you know, I feel like maybe they would disagree with, say, the gay marriage. Nobody's trying to get it off the table.
Right.
Though.
Right.
society's rolled. A few people tried to stop them picketing with hate signs and stuff. Yeah. That's right. About it.
Westboro Baptist Church kind of folks nowadays. You know, that's about the last refuge for those right. kind of feelings.
All and the church people around here were probably like, fair enough. Like,
as a loose representative of believers, Westboro were bad people.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. You have to.
We as religious folks, we don't truly believe.
The only people who. You have to attend Westboro Baptist Church and think that they're doing the right thing.
You
okay.
have to drink so that all Kool-Aid.
13 of them or whatever. Yeah. Yeah. Picketing soldiers' funeral saying God hates.
Wow.
Facts.
Yeah. That's crazy.
Gosh.
Yeah, I know. Dang it. But that's what their sign said.
Wow. Yeah, that's true.
Man.
All right, guys, we're going to wrap this episode up. That's enough political talk. Like, the politically, it reaches like a critical mass, and then we've got to, you know, it's like, you know, holding in a sneeze or not coming or something. So we got to,
That's a whole genre of porn nowadays, isn't it? Yeah.
All right. Yeah. Ruined.
Yeah. Ruined orgasms. I'm not interested in any of that. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm good. I see things through. All right.
Ruination and my sexual exploits. Yeah. Not a chapter I'm going to devote to that.
Oh, wait till you have children.
Yeah, see if you could do a while.
Yeah. Yeah,
off exactly. in the background, like, I can't do this.
Yeah.
No interest now, sorry.
I walked in on our parents once. I'm sure that was that ruined the moment for them.
Yeah. But they're like, hey, what's that? Hey, close the door.
Yeah, shout out mom and stepdad.
All right, well, that's going to end it. Shout out to Laura Lindley, attorney at law, our main sponsor, north side of the courthouse. You hear it at the beginning of every episode, and I was hoping to see if we could get her in. I don't know. We should record something special for the podcast, and because I want to re-record it, I realize my voice doesn't sound great on it. I want to do a new one, and I want production quality, and if we could actually have her in as the intro to the podcast.
I thought as a guest for the podcast, shoot. Man.
If we didn't use it and make it a podcast, but we used a part of it as the clip, she could
always be welcome on the podcast. That would actually be great. I would love a woman's perspective and a smart one and one who...
You're the closest thing we have, Tyler.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm just not there yet enough.
Yeah. It's the beard.
That's right. That's right. Well, we'll figure that out, though. Thank you to Laura Lindley. She's amazing, and for the support that she gives the podcast. Thank you to Hochatown Distilling Company and Mountain Fort Brewery, especially for fueling the camping trip and a lot of the podcasts in the past, and just great people and a fantastic place to go to, the Speakeasy. So
I would like to credit Hochatown Distilling Company right now, but I can't even remember the camping trip because of them. So
I was going to say we didn't really talk about it, but we just didn't really remember a lot about it.
Right. Hochatown Distilling Company, the best time you'll never remember.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I think it was good.
Yeah.
I had some bruises. Don't know where those came from. All right, but we're going to end it, and we'll catch y'all next week.
Peace.
Goodbye.